with the doctors was mere pretext for his actual discriminatory motive. This court has already examined the same set of events and found race discrimination. Less than 60 days ago, this court decided a closely related case, Marion County versus the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, and decided that Kenneth Ackles was not credible, had a stated preference for employing blacks rather than whites, and that he had taken overt actions toward carrying out that stated goal.
Was there any evidence that the defendants were in contact with Dr. Carter prior to the termination of FPAI contract?
Your Honor, only John Linehan's statement that near the outset of his administration that Kenneth Ackles specifically asked him to look into bringing her to the office. We have no correspondence or anything of that sort. This case is just an example of the same discrimination that this court found in the John Linehan case. And something I think the court should note is that the fact finder in that companion case was not a jury of laypersons. It was a federal administrative law judge appointed by the specialized agency with expertise in determining whether or not race discrimination exists. Now, the district court...
Actually, that's the major problem in your relying on it. The standard of review in the case was whether substantial evidence supported the agency's decision on that record.
Well, yes, Your Honor.
Obviously not the same as this record, and substantial evidence is not the standard of our review.
It's a different standard, Judge, but remember, in the present case, we don't have to actually prove discrimination. We merely have to raise a genuine issue of material fact. We think that if there is substantial evidence under this same set of events, and yes, sir, it's not the identical record, but it is the same events. If there is substantial evidence to find discrimination, then there should be the same quantum of evidence to determine a disputed issue of material fact. So yes, sir, the standards of review are slightly different, but this court has already found that Kenneth Ackles' explanation was not credible, that he had a stated goal.
Oh, we have not found that. We said substantial evidence supports a decision by the EEOC to that effect. We have not said that that's true. Right? There's a big difference in administrative law between substantial evidence and the court making its own finding.
Absolutely.
I don't mind your relying on that decision, but you do need to understand and state accurately what it was we held. We did not make, the judicial branch did not make an independent decision in that case.
It did not, Your Honor, but it did affirm the EEOC's finding.
Well, what about the, it seems to me the central issue is whether the reason that that they gave Ackles and Ballou for getting rid of Radins and Cattellier was a lie. Right?
That is the central question,
so
Your
they
Honor.
They seem to have been confused at best, but what's your reason for thinking they didn't really believe that, you know, they were being overcharged because these people were doing these private autopsies on state property or city property?
Because, Your Honor, in the trial of John Linehan's case...
Oh, let's forget about that, okay? Let's talk about what in this case.
He has said initially that the reason for terminating the contract was that he was told by the city legal department that it contained illegal terms. That is a completely different reason from for saying that there are too many expenses from supplies or the overall cost
is too high. Is it that different? Because I thought there was at least some indication that they thought that to allow these people to be doing private autopsies on in the coroner's office was raised a legal question, or at least that the legal staff of the city had raised a question about it, whether or not it was a legal question.
And this was the coroner's explanation in July of 2007. It was not his explanation during the life of the contract.
No, I'm asking you how different the explanations are. Apparently it was legal that raised a question about the appropriateness of allowing them to do these private autopsies.
Yes, sir.
So in their confused minds, or Ackles seems to be pretty confused, he may have thought that somehow it was not only wasteful or, you know, to be allowing them to do this, but that it might raise legal questions. Because, you know, use of public property for private profit, of course, can raise legal questions.
Absolutely, Your Honor. And if Kenneth Ackles believed, whether correctly or incorrectly, that the contract contained illegal terms, that would be grounds for...
Right. So the question is, what's the reason to think that he didn't?
Because he said different things at different times.
I don't understand how different they are. What's the difference?
Because as time went on, the reason became, we cannot afford this contract. Not that it's illegal, but that we can't afford it.
My question is whether he really sharply distinguished between those two.
Kenneth Ackles' testimony is difficult to parse at times, but the administrative law judge who elicited that testimony...
No, look, let's not get into that. The testimony that he gave in that administrative proceeding, that testimony is available. All right, that's testimony.
Yes, sir.
Okay. That's apart from the decision, either by the EEOC or by us. Okay, so the reason he gave, right, there's this very brief discussion in which he says legal had warned him against this, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
Now later, when he starts talking about the costs and so on, how different is that?
It's very different, Your Honor, because the explanation given 2.5 years later in the deposition in this case was that Marion County cannot afford this contract. We could not fund it. There is no statement to that effect in July 2007, and certainly not during the life of the contract. And I might add, Your Honor, that during the life of the contract, Dr. Redentz met several times with Kenneth Ackles, who repeatedly assured him that the contract would not be terminated. So to the extent that there was some discussion of, well, you know, we think the cost of supplies are too high, they were explicitly told to the doctors on multiple occasions, this is not a sufficient reason to terminate the contract. We don't want to terminate the contract or to renegotiate it. And another fact,
but
Your Honor...
But isn't Clifford the lawyer?
No, Your Honor. He was the city controller. Mm-hmm. He was a top aide to the mayor.
Right, okay.
Kenneth Ackles repeatedly said that this is not a reason to terminate the contract. And yet later on, he says it is. But only after giving the intervening reason that... The contract is illegal. And something Your Honor should take note of, the specific provision that was believed to be illegal was contained a clause that said that the coroner can unilaterally tell the doctors to stop doing autopsies for outside counties. So if, rightly or wrongly, Kenneth Ackles believed that this was illegal or too expensive, he could have simply said, stop. He could have taken care of this problem without the turmoil of completely changing pathology providers. That's a pretty strong reason to believe that what motivated him was not the contractual provision, but the people. He wanted to replace people, not a defective contractual term. And would also note, Your Honors, that every major personnel action that Kenneth Ackles took had the effect of increasing the number of blacks employed at the office and decreasing the number of whites. This is he did exactly what he told John Linehan that he would do. At the outset of his administration, he said, I want to bring in more blacks, even if it means...
Your opponent says that one of the things that Ackles said in the administrative proceeding was that high-priced pathologists were doing private work in the coroner's office and the city was not being compensated for it. Is that correct?
Yes, Your Honor. He said that. This is in response to a question from Ackles' own attorney saying, was it determined that the contract was illegal? And he gave this extremely long explanation.
But that statement of his about the is consistent with the eventual ground of termination.
The eventual ground for termination was that the county lacked the ability to fund the contract.
Well, that'd certainly be consistent with the sense that the these pathologists were profiting by being able to conduct private autopsies.
And that goes to illegality, Your Honor. That goes,
it goes to
the
illegality, but also goes to the whether it's a good contract.
But it doesn't go to the county's ability to fund it. It has nothing to do with the overall price of the contract or whether Marion County could afford
to
let this go on.
Hair splitting. He's not an articulate person, Ackles, and he may not have a good understanding of the economics of this contract. In fact, he didn't have a good understanding. But he seems to have been concerned from the beginning with the fact that pathologists were doing private autopsies. So that's a constant theme, right?
It is a constant theme, Your Honor, but again, it is not the same thing as saying we can't afford the contract. And the other constant theme is we want to hire more blacks, and we particularly want to have Joy Carter associated with this this office. He went down the direct path to that, whereas what he did with the contract was not a rational or efficient method of addressing this supposed illegality of the contract. And I think the fact that he carried out his stated goal of increasing the number of blacks and hiring Joy Carter is adequate grounds for a jury to find that Ackles did not sincerely believe that that was sufficient reason to terminate the contract. Your Honor, under McNabb, one of the grounds for finding pretext is whether the reason is sufficient. Ackles himself said that the problems with the outside autopsies are not a sufficient reason to terminate you. Therefore, in those several conversations that he had with Dr. Odents, he said he reassured him, I am not going to terminate or renegotiate this contract. I think that is also a telling insight into Dr. Ackles' true motivation, that he never attempted to renegotiate the allegedly offensive provisions of this contract.
You're in your rebuttal time, big time.
I'm sorry, Your Honor. Unless there are further questions, I will withdraw.
Certainly, counsel. Ms. Kapke.
Thank you. May it please the court. This is a case about money, about cost overruns, about a bad contract. Judge Lawrence correctly found that these budgetary concerns were legitimate, non-discriminatory reasons for terminating the FBAI contract.
Ms. Kapke, even if we agree that the defendants were concerned with the cost of the contract, given the avowed desire to hire an African-American, and specifically Dr. Carter? And of the evidence that African-Americans were disproportionately hired, how can we conclude that on this record that the decision to contract, the decision to end the contract was not race-based?
There are two aspects to your question. I'll address the statistics first. And the evidence in this case is that other than the African-American autopsy assistants that were brought over from FPAI, Ms. Ballou, who did all of the hiring decisions after she was hired, hired five people, all of whom were Caucasian or Hispanic. If you look at the chart on pages 25 to 26 of our brief, plaintiffs are simply wrong in asserting that there's this big change in demographics. What MCCO did is they took in...
But weren't these four guys, I don't know if they were men, weren't they given much better jobs by the city than they had had at the FTIA?
I actually don't know the answer to that question. I mean, they did the same job. I don't know if they made more money.
There's nothing about whether they were paid more or worked longer hours or what?
There's nothing in the record. In fact, I don't know what FPAI paid them. There's one reference in the record to a letter that they wrote to Congressman or Congresswoman Carson, but there's no evidence about what FPAI, in fact, paid them. But with respect to whether making them county employees is somehow discriminatory, Dr. Redens admitted in his deposition that there was nothing racially discriminatory, and, in fact, he was in favor of a plan.
What is this letter to the Congress you're talking about?
FPAI employees, three of the FPAI pathologists wrote a letter to Congresswoman Carson complaining about their pay conditions and saying we'd like to become employees of the county.
And Ackles obliged them.
But if Dr. Ackles did do that, that tells you nothing. Dr. Redens admitted there's nothing racially discriminatory about that.
As a result of getting rid of Radnes and Cattelier, he's able to give these four black people a better job, the job they want.
Yes, Your Honor. And again, Dr. Reden said there's nothing racially discriminatory about that plan, and he would have supported that plan if the employees were on board with it. He says that in his deposition. To the second point of your question regarding his stated preference, that was made 18 months prior.
No. Oh, I'm sorry. Yes. I'm sorry.
I didn't want to miss that question.
Redens doesn't care where these people work. The point is that they wanted to be county employees. They complained to their congressman, and they become county employees. And so Ackles is doing something for blacks, which apparently he's always wanted to do.
If anything, I think that harms your case. In that it seems to have been a dream of Dr. Ackles to have Dr. Carter.
I don't think that's true either. There's one reference 18 months prior to the termination notice of Dr. Carter, and there is absolutely no reference to her whatsoever in the 18 months subsequent to that. And, in fact, Dr. Carter was not living in Indianapolis when the notice of termination was issued on June 19, 2006. The only time Dr. Carter came into the picture was in mid-October when she called up the coroner's office after the coroner's office had made offers to two of FPAI's pathologists who are not parties to this suit.
Look, the way I see the problem here is that the facts are just too ambiguous to possibly support summary judgment. Even the district court concluded that the plaintiffs succeeded in establishing discriminatory intent in the case. But what the district court then did was dismiss from consideration the remarks by Dr. Ackles indicating his desire to hire African Americans to replace Caucasian workers, and specifically mentioning his desire to hire Joyce Carter. That's direct evidence of discrimination. 18 months prior or the day before?
Respectfully, I don't think so, because it's superseded by so many things. You have Dr. Ackles getting advice from Bob Clifford, from the city controller. You have Alfarina Ballou documenting over and over and over the budgetary concerns. You have the MCCO reaching out and trying to renegotiate. Did Dr. Ackles hire Ballou? Yes.
And she, of course, is black.
Mm-hmm.
And yet there are very, very few black pathologists. I mean, she's perfectly qualified, but there are very few black pathologists, aren't there?
Yes, that's correct.
Yeah. So he made a point of hiring a black.
Well, Ballou isn't a pathologist. She's just a deputy coroner. So that's a position that I think it requires a bachelor's degree.
No, but the deputy coroner is the one who runs the office. The coroner is a kind of figurehead.
Correct, but
you want the deputy coroner. I would think you'd want the deputy coroner to be a pathologist.
No, there's never been a pathologist. John Linehan was an EMT. He was an emergency medical technician. The prior chief deputy coroner in the administration before Dr. Ackles, I think, worked at a hospital, but she had no pathology experience. The chief deputy coroners are never doctors. There's been history of that. Because what they do is
disagree with you. You have a coroner who's a figurehead and doesn't know anything about anything. Then you have the deputy chief coroner is obviously the person running the office, and it's a pathology office, and it's run by a emergency room doctor. What's that about?
Oh, and not a doctor. What the chief deputy coroner does is basically run the investigatory side, not the pathology. The chief deputy coroner never interferes with what the pathologists do. They're two separate functions. And so really the only response...
Oh, I see what you mean. So determining cause of death. Well, that's what pathology... Well,
The pathologists do the autopsies, and the deputy coroners basically handle getting...
I understand. If there's a question about the cause of death, the coroner is going to rely on the pathologist.
Correct.
So how is the coroner to evaluate the pathologist's report if he's not a pathologist?
I don't think he evaluates the pathologist's report.
What do you mean by investigatory function? The coroner is going out and looking at bodies or something?
They go out to death scenes, yes. But respectfully, Your Honor, even admitting that this is a weird system...
I assume that in Indianapolis, as in many other places, there are still coroner's verdicts, right? So the coroner is going to say, I rule that this was a suicide, I rule that this was a homicide, I rule that... You can't have an Agatha Christie novel without the coroner.
I've never seen that. That may be the case. I've personally never seen that. But even if you...
So what is the coroner doing?
He is the person who deals with the funeral homes and getting the bodies back and forth. There's...
Oh, you need a funeral director, is it? You should have a lawyer as the coroner, a funeral director as the deputy coroner.
Respectfully,
words,
though, even if you admit this is a weird system, it doesn't...
You have a coroner who doesn't know anything about...
It doesn't distract from the fact that...
You have a chief deputy coroner who's engaged in sort of a logistical support function.
Yes.
Dealing with... Then you have the pathologists who are doing all the work, and if there is a coroner's verdict, it would be based on the pathologist's report, because the coroner just is dealing with funeral homes. So who is actually supervising the pathologists?
There's no one supervising them.
Oh,
they're
good.
Running their own operation. That's
no wonder they want this job.
Exactly. Exactly. And the contract, there are a couple of things I want to point out with respect to that contract. The city was running out of money, and they attempted to renegotiate with FPAI, and MCCO was rebuked.
Look. There are two competing explanations, okay? There are. One is that the county found the contract too expensive or too onerous. The other is that the contract was terminated because the defendants preferred to hire African Americans for the job. This is summary judgment.
Right, but on summary judgment, you're only entitled to reasonable inferences. And to give an example,
I just gave you two in
Swernigan L, which is a recent decision by this court. The court said that.
As I understand, correct me if I'm wrong. The reason that Radetz and Cattelier were permitted to do private pathologies on government property was that they said, we're going to charge the city less because, you know, we're going to make some money on the side from the private autopsies, and we're going to use, you know, the city supplies, but it's like $20 a body. And as far as taking up room, apparently they're not going to be prevented from doing their public work because they do occasional private autopsy. Now, this is pretty obvious, but apparently, according to your side of the case, Ackles didn't understand it and thought there was some ripoff going on.
Yes, and there was. And the $15 to $20 is what Dr. Radetz offers in his his conclusory self-serving testimony. The MCCO did an analysis. It's not that much. It's much more than that. MCCO did an analysis.
But if there was, why have there been no savings?
There was no analysis, and that gets to impermissible second guessing.
There is actually evidence that it wasn't $20. How much was it?
Yes, MCCO asked the independent analyst at the Office of Finance and Management to do an analysis of how much it cost, and they came up with $742 per autopsy as a benefit.
They weren't trying to determine the marginal cost.
They were trying to determine
the average cost. The question
for
Indianapolis was, what was the marginal cost of each of these extra autopsies? Was there any evidence that the marginal cost exceeded $20?
There's no evidence that it was $20 or any number
that it was $20,
right. That's
and nobody
evidence.
Testified to the contrary, then it's $20.
The analysis that OFM did, which the coroner's office doesn't know how to do that kind of analysis, and so they relied on that analysis.
The coroner's office doesn't know anything. That's
it looks like they hired somebody.
And that's why they rely on OFM, on the controller who's telling them.
They must understand that, of course, if you divide all the autopsies into the total cost of the office into all the autopsies, that's how you get your 742 figure. But as Judge Easterbrook was saying, there's a difference between average and marginal cost. Once they have the facilities, and if the facilities are underutilized, they can add another body and just have this bottle of formaldehyde or whatever they use, and, you know, it's very inexpensive. It doesn't cost the city anything.
It does, because supply costs went dramatically up.
Yeah, what, and from 20 to 30?
No, they had to ask for an additional $540,000 to pay for the FPAI contract over their budget. That's a lot of money.
Pay for supplies for private autopsies?
It was a combination of supplies and a combination of the extra cost that that the FPAI contract worth. $540,000 more. They were transferring money to pay for supplies. The coroner's office did not correctly calculate how much supplies were going to cost, and that's what caused them to look at this contract and say, we can't afford this. We cannot pay for this because of the supplies, and we shouldn't have to pay for the supplies.
Also, did they ask Radetz and Cattelier to renegotiate the contract?
They had multiple meetings with them, and in those meetings, they said, we've got a big issue with supplies. Give us more information about your out-of-county autopsies, and they were refused. Dr. Radetz and Dr. Cattelier refused to provide them any information. When they wrote a letter saying, let's get...
They exercised their option under the contract to require them to desist.
No, and the reason...
The contract says that on, I think it's 60 days' notice, they can... require them to stop.
And the reason why they didn't is because Dr. Radetz and Dr. Cattelier told them multiple times that they would charge them more. They had a very real fear that they were going to, that Dr. Radetz and
charge
Cattelier...
charge them more than the contract price?
Exactly.
Well, how can they do that?
Because they can terminate the contract either.
They need a new contract.
They can terminate the contract as well. And you're getting into impermissible second guessing because on June 19th...
This is total confusion now. The total confusion. You're saying that if they lowered the price, Radetz and Cattelier could cancel the contract.
Right.
they could demand a higher price. Well, fine. They could say to Rudess and Cattelier, look, if we're not going to pay you anymore, so if you want to walk away from the contract, fine. Mm-hmm. But that's not what happened.
That gets into impermissible second guessing because it was MCCO's business decision to negotiate
If defendants offer a reason for discrimination, which is preposterous, you say, well, you know, a jury might think that can't be the real reason because it's such nonsense. Now, your defense is going to be that Ackles is very confused, and it could be a good defense, but it's not clear that it's a basis for summary judgment.
Respectfully, you're getting into impermissible second-guessing because...
I don't know why it's impermissible.
Because the MCCO is entitled to decide how it negotiates with the pathologist.
But this isn't negotiation.
It is, though. They engaged in
negotiation. I don't think this is adding any extra information. Thank you, Ms.
Thank you for your time.
Mr. McCora, you have about 30 seconds.
Your Honor, very briefly, I'd like to correct two factual errors. The distinction between part-time employees and full-time is the critical distinction in understanding the increase in the number of black employees. If you count in full-time employees only, the number of blacks doubled. If you add part-time employees, some of whom worked 0 hours, then statistics are less striking because most of the part-time employees added were white. Second, with respect to negotiation, I disagree with counsel that there was negotiation. There are no documentary evidence of proposed contract terms.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
The case is taken under advisement.